I'm sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today you're going to hear Bob McElvain speaking from Ground Zero, and that will be followed by an interview that I did with Cynthia McKinney at the Toronto hearings. As you may already know, from September 8th to the 11th, the Toronto hearings were held, where 4 days of evidence was presented by scholars and experts who have spent much of the last 10 years researching what really happened on September 11th, 2001. Radio show hosts Greg Longo, Frank Tolupko, and I went to Ground Zero on August 10th to film Bob McElvain, who lost his son on 9/11, for the Toronto hearings. The following clip is the audio version of his testimony. Since it was filmed at Ground Zero and there's a lot of construction going on the new buildings there, there's some background noise which could not be edited out. The video of Bob speaking at Ground Zero was the last piece of testimony at the Toronto hearings. So here's Bob McElvain speaking at Ground Zero.
Hello, my name's Bob McElvain. I live in Philadelphia, the suburbs of Philadelphia. My son Bobby, almost 10 years ago, died right here at the site of the North Tower. It's been a long 10 years. Basically, all I want to do is introduce how I've come to the point that I'm doing what I'm doing now. But on September 11th, 2001, Bobby lived up at 66 between 1st and 2nd and took the subway to Fulton Street and walked over from Fulton Street, where he had just started a job at Merrill Lynch, which Merrill Lynch is, we're standing on Vesey Street. Merrill Lynch is, we go down the west and make a left on west and trade across the street on west. He had just started there like 2-3 weeks before 9/11. So my assumption is that day, we had no idea what happened to Bobby, but we came up to New York and we did find his body. We took Bobby home that week and buried him on a week later on Tuesday the 18th. For years and years, I've been trying to find out what happened that day. But in the beginning, things were so frantic, you spend almost a year just grieving because you just can't figure out what happened. But I questioned the story of 9/11 immediately. But again, I just wasn't getting involved in that too much. I had chosen at that time to go into the anti-war movement or the peace movement. I joined a group called September 11 Family for Peaceful Tomorrows, who were against the war, specifically a war because of 9/11. So I spent a lot of time doing that. I traveled around the world, and it sort of culminated in right before the Iraq War, when I got arrested in front of the White House, which is one of the best things I've ever done in my life, because it just felt good. I've traveled around the world. I've been to Japan to honor the, about 5 years ago, we walked from Nagasaki to Hiroshima, honoring the civilians killed in wars, and in particular, the bombings of Nagasaki and Hiroshima. I've been to Bogota, Colombia, talking about basically what I felt at that time, the blowback of American foreign policy has created this havoc that we have in the world. And of course, I went to almost 90% of the 9/11 Commission hearings. Well, my whole life changed after Condoleezza Rice testified. And I don't call it testimony. As far as the case of Condoleezza Rice, it was a filibuster. They were questioning her about this August 6th memo that Osama bin Laden was supposed to attack the United States. And of course, I assume everyone knows what a filibuster is, but she just talked nonsense. And each commissioner only had 5 minutes to speak up or to ask questions. Well, anyway, that ended. Nothing was said. Nothing was done. All the commissioners are Saran and Condoleezza Rice shaking their hands. Everyone's smiling. And that's when I lost my cool. It was after that that I did an interview. I was angry, and I've been angry ever since. I realized the investigation was a total sham, and I think everyone in the world knows that the investigation was a total sham. Even the commissioners admit, some of the commissioners admit that it was a sham. So I've dedicated my life since then to just concentrating on 9/11 truth. Even at that time, I felt strongly that there were people within the United States who were involved in this, but Who knew? So since 2004, I've dedicated my life to what happened that day. And I've been very global in that thinking. You know, you talk about put options, you talk about NORAD, you talk about so many other things that are so important to 9/11. But I've noticed when I talk to people, they get glassy-eyed because there's so much information. Now, all this time, I'm looking into 9/11. I'm also looking into, and I think if anyone's lost a child, specifically murdered, but you always want to know exactly what happened to your child. You know, I know people that lost a child in a car accident. They wanted to know, did that child suffer? And that's a big part. I could never figure out what happened to him. We took Bobby home that week. He was one of the first 10 bodies found. I never viewed the body itself because they said, and I'm glad I didn't, because it was truly mangled. But his whole body was taken home. Well, a few years ago, I finally ran into the doctor who examined Bobby, and he gave me an outline. He told me not to look at the pictures, but he gave me an outline of all his injuries. And this was very revealing to me because there was over 100 phone calls made to Bobby that morning, and of course, not one of them was answered. Now, if he was anywhere, he would immediately have answered that phone. So what was happening, I think, this is my scenario, he came down the Fulton Street, walked over here, and decided to go to a seminar that was on the 106th floor of the old North Tower. And we ruled out that he was on the 106th floor because he wouldn't have been one of the first 10 bodies found. We thought maybe he jumped, but the thing is, he had one small break on his leg, and all his injuries were in the chest and in the face. Back of him, no problem. His skull was still intact, but everything was blown off his face. He lost his arm and severe lacerations of his chest. So from what I talked to the doctor, Bobby died instantly. He didn't have a chance to pick up his phone or answer in the cell phone. So through the years, and of course in my investigation, and I'll get to that real fast after we're done this, I am talking to so many EMS workers, so many firemen, so many policemen, the explosions that were taking place in the towers before and after the plane hit. And this is the most important point to me. The 9/11 Commission hearings states that a fireball from the plane hitting from the 93rd to up to the 98th floor, because the plane went in on an angle, the fuel was in the wings, and the 9/11 Commission reports attributes the damage to the lobby, where many firemen have told me it looks like a bomb went off in the lobby. Bombs went off in the sub-basement. I've had reports that the bombs went off before the plane hit. So my scenario is that the idea, again, the commission saying only a fireball created this damage, the explosions that were going off in the basement and in the lobby, I feel Bobby walked into the lobby, or might not have even made it into the lobby, and there was a huge explosion. And what finally caught me on as far as exactly what happened to Bobby, I was wondering why, well, if they said it was a fireball, he would have had severe burns, because within the North Tower, you had people that were charred. People's bodies were cut in half, but everybody was charred. And I'm saying to myself, well, what happened to Bobby? I don't know exactly where they found him. But, and this is a key point, in an explosion, in a detonation, the air that shoots out from that explosion is supersonic. The gases shoot out in supersonic speed, and then the heat follows it. The fireball, supposedly, that came down does not have that energy. Remember, every window in the North Tower was blown out. You have an area of 208 feet by 208 feet. It's impossible that a fireball created that damage. So therefore, my thing with Bobby was that he was walking into the towers, there was a huge explosion, it killed him instantly, hit him in the face, hit him in the chest, obviously took off his arm, and that's how he died. So I give presentations now, I say, well, how in the world did those explosions take place? And my point being is, there's no way in the world Muslims set those detonations. The planes, it was impossible that the planes created that havoc. So when I'm talking to you great people up in Toronto, if you could, please, please spend time on these explosions. There's so much testimony. And remember, the 9/11 Commission report refused to acknowledge the testimony they got from firemen, from policemen, from the EMS workers of these explosions that were taking place in the sub-basement. And both the 9/11 Commission report and NIST lied about that. NIST said that there were no explosions, so why do we have to test the steel that came from the towers? So, do I want a new investigation? quite frankly with you, I don't care if there's a new investigation. I know it's necessary, but I can't believe an honest investigation will never take place. You're having hearings up in Toronto. I just think it's such a wonderful thing because it's going to put this information out to hopefully the whole world. And from that, maybe we would have a nonpartisan, objective investigation. But just for me, please spend the time on those explosions because that's a key point to me. That if these explosions took place, I can't believe, I know that the Muslims did not set those explosions within, or those bombs within the towers. And I would rather exonerate or let the Muslims of the world off the hook. The fact that, you know, I'm getting to a point where I don't really care who murdered Bobby. But the thing is, we're in a constant war. And it's based on what happened that day, what happened that morning. And these are explosions that took place. So I really wish you luck in Toronto. My spirit is with you, but my family, we're here at Ground Zero every September 11th. Or I'm getting sick of that also, especially since Bush is going to be down here. But we'll be here. So I will be thinking of you, and I just want you all to stay strong and do your thing. Thank you.
And again, that was Bob McElvain at Ground Zero. Bob lost his son on 9/11. Cynthia McKinney spoke at the Toronto hearings, and I was able to get a few minutes of her time there to do a short interview. This was no easy task because she was in great demand. Although I had told her previously to the interview where I was from, she was being so bombarded by people wanting interviews that when I actually had the opportunity, she forgot where I was from and thought I was Canadian, as you'll hear in the interview. And here she is, Cynthia McKinney, on September 10th, 2011, in Toronto. So I'm here at the Toronto hearings with Cynthia McKinney. Cynthia, thanks for being with me and being willing to do the interview.
Thank you.
Could you just tell us a bit about your background and when you started to get interested in 9/11?
Well, I was interested from the very moment that it happened because I was in Washington, D.C. at the time, and I was a member of Congress at the time, and so it gave me a unique sort of insider perspective on what happened and what should have happened in terms of explanations, investigations that never did happen, and that, of course, raised my ire.
Yes, and my congressman says that he has found no evidence that challenges the official story to 9/11, even though I've given him some. But I'm just wondering, in Congress, have they been exposed to other materials, sort of more our point of view or the challenges to the official story?
They have been exposed to the official story, which is enough for any thinking person to reject it.
And how did your fellow congressman relate to you when you started the hearings on 9/11?
Well, of course, that was not an area of interest or research that was supported because, of course, when it assumes that what you've been told is not actually the truth. And so very reluctantly, members of Congress would make such explorations.
And you're going to be working and supporting the ballot initiative that Senator Gravel is working on. And could you tell us a little bit about that and why you're interested and why you support that?
Well, this is an innovative way for the citizens to have an opportunity to make their statement, which also will change the policy with respect to the authenticity of an investigation. Clearly, when you have a tragedy of that level of importance, there ought to be an investigation. And the idea that we are being denied an independent, transparent investigation is outrageous. And I don't really think people still understand that the little that we're asking for ought to be standard operating procedure.
Now, I understand you just spent some time in Libya. Can you tell us a little bit about what you found there and what you discovered and learned? And also, is there a connection to 9/11 and Libya?
There is definitely a connection between the events of September 11th and Libya because Libya is the continuation on the spectrum of war that was started by September 11th and permissible war crimes, commit permissible crimes against humanity, and it all sparks from what happened on that particular day in Pennsylvania and New York and Washington, D.C.
And since you were in Libya, is the media telling us the truth about what you witnessed there or what's happening there?
No, absolutely not. And it's a very sad thing to see the degeneration of what was once something, an institution that I held in very high esteem, and that is the media in Canada. I've known about the media inside the United States and their ability to manipulate and willingness and readiness to manipulate, but I didn't think that Canada operated in the same way. Now I'm sad to learn from firsthand experience that Canada also spreads lies and disinformation in the same way Canada's media do that, in the same way that the U.S. media do it as well. So what happened in Libya is war crimes, crimes against humanity, things that should never take place, routinely took place, and the carpet bombing, it's just absolutely horrific what is happening to the sovereign country of Libya.
And what motivates you to do what you do?
That's a real good question, because the reward is a huge intangible. And I ask myself, why do I do what I do too? But there is a moment at which the compulsion to act is such that I can't remain still. And the compulsion to speak, I can't remain quiet. When I know the truth, then I share the truth. And that's why it was important for me to put a delegation of alternative journalists together and go to Libya when underneath the NATO bombing, so that I could, along with the members of the delegation, approximate the truth and tell that to the public.
Well, I know you have a lot of fans who are really happy that you have that motivation and do what you do. One last question for you. I heard you in your speech in the conference, and you were talking about in 2003 the law that allowed the media to tell lies, and maybe you could explain that a little bit to the listeners.
Yes, actually, we have a hearing, a judicial opinion, that found that it was legal for the press in the United States to knowingly lie to the public. And I think that just about tells us where the United States is in the whole process of exercising our freedom of expression and the responsibilities that are involved in just even active citizenship to engage and tell the truth.
And I lied. I said that was my last question, but I just have one more. What can people do? What can the listeners do if they want to help out, getting at the truth of 9/11 with the ballot initiative or anything else with Libya? What do you think people could do to help? I think people want to do things, but they feel like they don't know where to turn.
Well, don't know where to turn. I don't know that I have any special insights on that, because there's a whole world of information out there, and people just have to turn on their laptops and click around on the World Wide Web and search on various subjects, whether it's war or peace or U.S. or Canadian policy or NATO. There's so much information that's out there. It's almost sinful that people would say that they are uninformed. But one way that you can definitely remain uninformed is to read the corporate, or what I call the special interest press, because they have a special interest in putting out their own particular interests that fail to intersect with the truth, whereas alternative media outlets, while certainly not perfect, because we've seen that in the case of Libya, where media that we thought were truth-telling media ended up being just as much interested in special interest media messaging as the larger brothers and sisters in the special interest press. So alternative media first, but there's nothing like original government documents. And that's why I go always as a starting point to the counterintelligence program of the United States government. There you read those documents and you can see that there were very highly paid bureaucrats in the intelligence operations of the United States who made their business to destroy the marriages of people who were politically active. They broke into their homes. They trailed their children. These are activities that are unthinkable, except they happened and they wrote about it. They made their reports. And now it's incumbent upon people to read those reports, because if you think that there is no level to which a government will stoop, the counterintelligence program documents will rebut that notion very quickly.
And how does one find those reports? Is there a website or?
One can go to the search engine of your choice. I use StartPage, because StartPage does not collect IP addresses and does not maintain search history. StartPage.com, and then put into that COINTELPRO, which is COINTELPRO. And there are many sites that have the original U.S. government documents. In addition to that, one excellent starting place is also thekingcenter.org, where the transcript of the trial that took place in 1999 on who actually murdered Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. is located. And there in that transcript are gems of information that include information about people who are still alive who played a role in the murder of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. The short story of that is that the jury found that the United States was guilty of complicity in the murder of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So here we have a way to underscore the truth of what our government will do, the United States government will do. And for the people of Canada, it is important to know what you are hitching your wagon to. Operation Northwoods is another one of those very important documents that describes what the denizens of the Pentagon are willing to do inside the United States in order to justify a war that they wanted to carry out.
And you mentioned how the government can harass people or follow people or break up marriages. Have you ever been attacked that way by the government? Have you, if you're aware of it?
Well, I've had some very strange things happen to me. In fact, one of them is in a documentary that has been released earlier this year. The name of the documentary is COINTELPRO 101. And in that documentary, I relate the story of how a journalist, within quotation marks, actually said that I should be a radio journalist, said that I should be lynched on my way to vote. And when this came out, I'm accustomed to getting death threats. I get death threats. You know, I would get them a lot when I was in the Congress, and that was nothing new for me, but my staff were quite alarmed at it, and so they reported it to the FBI. Well, years later, that particular journalist who was being brought up on charges of threatening two sitting judges in the state of Connecticut, of course, no prosecutor sought to charge him with threatening me, but these two white judges, the prosecutor decided to bring a guy up on charges, and his defense was that he was on the FBI payroll. And so he was on the FBI payroll, paid at the time he made the statement about me. He was paid by the very entity that was charged with protecting me. That is the joke of what happens when people are outspoken inside the United States and take advantage, full advantage of the U.S. Constitution and our Bill of Rights. That's the kind of thing that happens.
Wow, that's distressing to hear, but I'm not surprised. Is there anything else you'd like to say to our listeners? This program will air at the University of Hartford and at Wesleyan University, both in Connecticut.
Oh, my goodness, I didn't even realize that. So I would just say that we have to engage in active citizenship. We have a responsibility to do that because we still have a right to do that. And as our rights are being eroded literally before our very eyes, we have to draw a line in the sand and say that we will not allow them to go one step further against the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the things, the vision that we have of the United States that we try to hold so dear. I will conclude by quoting the words of John Kennedy in 1963, when he spoke at American University. He asked, "What kind of peace do we want? What kind of peace am I talking about? Not a Pax Americana enforced on the world by U.S. weapons of war." That is the time when we had a real president. That real president was stolen from us by snipers' bullets, along with the very real visionaries of Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. and Bobby Kennedy as well. They were stolen from us because we were on the cusp of actually winning. People from all walks of life, black, white, Spanish language speaking, all religions, we had found a way in the 1960s and 70s to come together to oppose unjust wars and to oppose injustice at home. We have to do that again. And I will close with Mario Savio, who said that we have to send a message to the owners of the machine that they have to stop this machine, or else we the people will stop it.
Thank you very much, Cynthia.
Okay, thank you.
You were just listening to an interview with Cynthia McKinney at the Toronto hearings. Many of the videos from the Toronto hearings are now posted on YouTube, or you can go to torontohearings.org. And now I'm going to tell you about an event. On Sunday, October 16th at 2 p.m., there's going to be a march and rally in Hartford. It'll start at City Hall and go to the state capitol. And it's to bring our war dollars home now. So again, that Sunday, October 16th at 2 p.m. Demand that they bring our war dollars home now. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.